This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The only one that like I maybe would have thought about more is the chance to rest Carlo, and not even anything about Carlo. But I do think like at some point before the trade deadline, they have to decide and know like what they have in Zboril, and you know, do you trust him as your seventh defenseman? Do you trust him as your eighth defenseman? Like, how exactly do you feel about him, and where does he slot in down the stretch and go into the playoffs? And I just think it's really, you know, yeah, we saw early in the season he had some struggles, but like it's really hard to judge where. I know you have practice, I know you see him every day, but I don't know how you really get like a true reading of where a guy is when he goes, you know, 2 months, basically 2 months without playing. Like that's tough. So, you know, I think we all feel like adding depth on defense is sort of a natural area they might, you know, look to address anyways, but I would think you'd want to have a little bit better idea of like where Zboril is and how he looks in games right now before you go out and decide like, okay, do we need to get one guy to upgrade over him, two guys to upgrade over? Like, just have a kind of a better idea of, like, where you see him slotting in.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, especially when you think about the fact that no one has gotten in so long. Like, you have to assume you're not going to go in, or at least you're not going to spend the entire playoffs with all six of those guys healthy the whole time. So you do need to know where he can go, and how screwed you are if all of a sudden you're game seven with, you know, Carolina or Toronto, and you're like, okay, well, we need someone to come in right now. Are we really completely screwed if we have him come in and he can't take the minutes and he can't keep up? Yeah, you do need to know about how he can play. If he is an answer for you in the playoffs, or if he's not, and you need to add someone.
And one guy too, like we talk about him ever so often, but like we kind of forget Mike Riley is just chilling in Providence, playing in Providence. And Mike Riley, let's be honest. I mean, he's an NHL defenseman.
Yeah, he's not bad either.
He is.
When he first went down, we were like having arguments about like, oh, was that the right move? Like, is he? He's just, and unfortunately for him too, it's not been as noticeable that he's missing because of how well everybody else has been playing. So you kind of do forget about him.
Well, and I think the problem with Riley is that it's almost like stylistically, there's only one guy he would fill in for, and that'd be Grizzlick. Not that they're the exact same player. Like, I don't want to, you know, put either one of them in a box, but you know, thinking about it, like say Carlo missed more time, it's like, well, Riley wouldn't really be the guy to come in like that. You're probably looking for someone with, you know, at least a little more size, a little more defensively responsible, can help on the penalty kill. So like Zboril would at least be the guy who would get first crack at that. Or even Strahlman, who, by the way, just played his first game in Providence on Sunday, you know, finally actually reported and started practicing, which indicates that, you know, maybe they have, either they have some sort of plan for him where maybe he's back at some point, or that could even be a thing where it's like, you know, maybe the Bruins start to put pressure on because it's like, hey, we want to see where Anton Strahlman is before the trade deadline. Like, is he at all going to be a factor for us down the stretch? So, yeah, you know, at least you have Riley and Strahlman playing now. Obviously Riley's been playing in Providence for a while, but it is kind of hard to see like exactly where he fits in, because like I said, if Grizzly gets hurt, then it's really simple. It's like, okay, Riley fits that. But if, you know, say it was Forbert that went down again, you're looking for, you know, a penalty kill kind of defensive defenseman, and you know, Riley would completely change the dynamic of that third pairing if he were the guy there.
So I want to pose this question to you guys. Would you say that as of right now, the Bruins have it's a two-part question. Part one, would you say they have the best all-around blue line in the NHL to this point? And part two, do you think that Lindholm and McAvoy is the best 1-2 combo in the league?
I'll answer the first one first, which is, I think they probably do. The other one that comes to mind immediately is Carolina's, which I don't think there's as much offensive upside outside of Brent Burns. So, and even that, like, Burns isn't quite the all-around player that a McAvoy or Lindholm is at this point. So I'd probably give the edge to the Bruins there, but certainly, you know, Carolina has some really good defensemen who are just very good, well-rounded players who can skate, move the puck, like Slavin, Pesci, Brady Shea.
They got rid of Tony D, though. Our favorite, everybody's favorite, Tony D'Angelo.
Somehow not even the most controversial defenseman on the Flyers now, thanks to Ivan Provorov.
Yep. Anyway, sorry to cut you off there.
If you guys want to weigh in on that, I'm still thinking about the second part, because my instinct is McAvoy and Lindholm might be the best top two, but I'm trying to run through other options.
I actually like how they are. Yeah, when they're split up, when Lindholm is with Carlo and McAvoy's with Grizzlick, you almost just get no reprieve for if you're the other team. You get no reprieve from guys who can do pretty much everything on the ice, be physical, set plays up, score. Scott, I see that you've come up with your answer.
Yeah, well, I guess the first one that would come to mind is Cale Makar and Devin Taves with the Avs, obviously, who, you know, we just saw play a huge role in them winning the Cup. So I might give that an edge just because even as great as McAvoy and Lindholm are, neither one is Makar. Devin Taves is pretty damn good, too.
Another Quinnipiac guy.
Yep.
Do you know what scares me about a Carolina matchup? And is, you look at their defense, right? And obviously Scott mentioned them, so I'm just doing a deep dive on them. Brent Burns, Brett Pesci, Brady Shea, Jacob Slavin, okay? They are 6'5", 6'3", 6'3", and 6'3". Jalen Chatfield is 6'1". Dylan Coughlin, is that how you say his name? He's 6'2". And then Calvin DeHaan is 6'1". So, like, they're just a meaty back end, for lack of a better terminology. And that's why, like, I really like the idea of the Bruins going after, like, a Luke Shen type, just to bolster that department of their defense. And this is not me saying, like, just go out and get size and physicality, because, like, I'm not saying to go get a bunch of meatheads. I'm just saying, like,
Tim Ordy, do that again.
I like Luke Shen. I like the prospect of Luke Shen. I like what he brings to a team. And I just think if you were to get one guy like that to just, like, have as a depth piece on your blue line, where, like, if you feel like the combination of Clifton and Grizzly being in the lineup is just, like, you're a little small back there. And I know how Clifton plays a lot bigger than his size, but I look at Carolina in particular, because I think they present the biggest challenge in the Eastern Conference to Boston in the playoffs. And, like, not only are their defensemen, like, really talented, like Pesci and Shea, Slavin, Burns, they're really good players, and they're also all 6'3 to 6'5. So that's one thing that scares me about them. And I think that even though I think right now the Bruins blue line might be more talented overall or better overall, I do think Carolina, it helps them in their D zone coverage, just like winning board battles and 50-50 pucks in the corner. Like, that's why they're very successful. They're very stingy and they're very tight checking team. And I think I was just going to say, do they play man on man in Carolina too?
I don't know. Are they one of the few that does?
I think they might. And it might be why it's more noticeable that, like, they're so tight checking, because when the Bruins play them, it's like they're just right up like everybody's ass in the corner. So
And that size is why they gave up so few high danger changes, like, which Bruins know as well as anyone, because that was basically their biggest problem in that series last year was, you know, they really struggled to get to the inside. And the Bruins have been, you know, Bruins struggled with that in general last year, but against a team like Carolina, it really stood out. Bruins have been obviously been a lot better at creating those high danger chances and getting to the inside this season. It's been a big point of emphasis from Montgomery. So, you know, that kind of stands as like the ultimate test of that, of like, you know, how much better did you get? And Bridget, I think like what you're getting is like, you're going to, you see Carolina on this road trip.
Yep. We're about to see it. And on the road, which is also where the Bruins struggled in the playoffs. Was all those road games were difficult for them. It's a loud place to play. I used to live in North Carolina and you know, especially for the playoffs, but now that the team is as good as it is, like you're seeing those kind of games in the regular season as well, where fans are filling it in more, and they do have a very loud fan base. So you'll get a good look at it on the 29th, January 29th, when they play at Carolina.
Yeah, I'm excited for that one. This is
and by the way, the Bruins won in overtime at home against Carolina, their only other meeting this year. So it was a close game.
Very close game. This is going to be a fun road trip. We see them play the Habs. Like we said last episode, it's like the first time in, what, since 1995 they're playing Montreal?
And, since you were born?
Yeah. And then you got, obviously, Tampa, Florida, Carolina, and Toronto. It's a fun road trip.
Yeah, and I think the Canadians even have almost 50% of their team healthy now. So
they
have just been absolutely hammered by the injury bug and just lost Cole Caulfield for the season, which, you know.
Oh, Pacioretty. Like,
just from the perspective of, like, that rivalry, it just sucks that, like, you know, the Canadians weren't very good anyways, and now you're getting, like, their JV team because they have so many injuries. Cole Caulfield is one of like the few exciting players they had to watch. And now, you know, he suffers a season ending injury before the Bruins even got to play them for the first time.
And that reminded me of that Max Pacioretty's out for Carolina. Yeah. So he's got a torn Achilles, and I don't know if the diagnosis is that he's going to be out for the whole season, but
have they officially said it was torn again? Is that,
yeah, that's what I saw today. I thought.
Yeah, I mean,
ESPN reported Pacioretty on IR with torn Achilles. So,
yeah, so that'd be season ending. But the flip side of that is it opens up $7 million in cap space for them. That was a team that was already looking to add at the deadline, especially center positions. So, you know, I know we talked about Bo Horvat as a possibility for the Bruins. I would say, like, Carolina would be insane to not go in on Bo Horvat, because now they have the cap space to add him. They don't have to do the whole retained salary thing. And he fills two needs for them. One being the center ice position, so they don't have to try to make Jesperi Kotkaniemi a number two center. And two, he's a goal scorer, which they desperately need. So, yeah, losing Pacioretty stinks, but it could almost make them like the clear odds on favorite to land someone like Horvat.
Yeah, that's true. That would be a really interesting turn of events, because like we said, you're going to see him January 29th, but they might not be exactly that team after the trade deadline. So we end up talking about a lot of matchup stuff, like looking down the road further, because I mean, what else are you going to say about the game against San Jose? They like ran circles around them. It was like almost sad at times. I was like, I might have time to take a quick nap here before I go home, because it was just at will, like just controlling the pace of that game the whole way through. So
hey, even Linus Sullmark took 2.5 minutes off in the middle of the game.
Yes, he did. That was weird. That was really weird. And it seemed like nobody on the team knew that the rule, like they thought that it was the same rule as like if the helmet falls off, but it's not. So for a while, everybody was just like, oh, they're going to blow the whistle. Oh, they're not blowing the whistle. And then the ref explained to Ullmark that they don't blow the whistle, even if a goalie loses a skate blade, because if a defenseman loses a skate blade forward, they don't blow the whistle. So they don't do that for a goalie either. And so Ullmark said he was like stunned, and he like didn't know what he was going to do if they took a shot on him, which luckily they didn't. And luckily Clifton found the puck, whipped it down the other end of the ice just to get the whistle for the icing, because that's your best option in that situation. You got to get a quick whistle.
Do you want to know what the verdict was in the stands that I was hearing people say? Because when Allmark left, people were like obviously confused, and obviously as we found out, it was a skate blade that fell out. But people were saying in the stands, I overheard them saying, "Yeah, he got hit. The puck hit him in the nuts." So and like everybody was believing that person. Like the guy had so much conviction when he said it. Everybody was like, "Oh, that's what happened."
God, don't believe the that reporter, the drunk guy in the 10th row.
Things you hear at the game.
Yeah, well, all the guys who play with Tuukka Rask should have known the rule because, as everyone probably remembers, Tuukka Rask made quite a big deal out of it when the whistle didn't blow when he lost the skate blade. He started waving it around like a wand and then chucked it across the ice.
Yeah, that was bad. That could have been bad. I think the Bruins ended up winning that game, so it was kind of like, you know, no harm, no foul. But in the moment, that was like, what's going on here, Tukes?
And correct me if I'm wrong,
that's like a top three Tuukka moment for me, along with obviously the milk crates in Providence, and then I think that this was just last year, the not coming to the bench when the game was tied, like he himself, and then they were like, "No, dude, get back in the net. What are you doing?"
In New York, right?
I do remember that.
Against the Rangers.
And then he answered questions afterwards like, "Yeah, guys, I don't know. I just don't know." But no, and Allmark said that, and correct me if I'm wrong, goalie skates aren't the pop-out skates, right? They're not like regular like skates that the guys have where you can replace the blade. I believe they're the old school kind because you don't really need to pop them in and out like you do for a forward, and he's not like cut, like moving around all that much. And someone asked Allmark after the game, they're like, "How does that work?" He goes, "I have no clue. I have no clue how it fell off." He goes, "Maybe the bolt rusted." Like he had no idea how it fell out.
Well, yeah, because I think you actually have to take the whole skate off. Like sometimes when a guy loses a blade, they can just pop one in like right there on the bench. But it looked like he actually had to take a skate off and like, you know, the staff had to take it back to the room and do whatever. But
yeah, exactly. That's why he had to come out for, what was it, 2.5 minutes? Because it wasn't one of the ones that you can just throw it back in and he gets right back out there. So that was weird that Swayman came in for 2.5 minutes, saved one shot, and it ends up, unfortunately for Allmark, because that happened, he doesn't get that shutout stat. And we've all talked about how like the stats for the Vezina are going to be coming down and he's not going to have as like high of stats in different categories because of the way that the Bruins have Swayman to come in. So that definitely doesn't, I mean, obviously it should have like a little asterisk, like how many does he have now? Like three. And it's basically, he's like three and like 99.
he has two shutouts in the season. This would have been the third, but
yeah, so 2.99 he misses out
because
shutouts.
He got taken out for 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, the NHL's Twitter account put out a tweet. It was like, Linus Allmark and Jeremy Swayman earned the split shutout. It's like, okay, well, 58 minutes to two, but yeah, sure, go for it. So I have a question for you guys, and Scott, maybe you can take it first. When it comes to DeBrusque, as long as he's on IR, the Bruins, the cap does not accrue for them, right? So do you think that maybe him coming back a little bit sooner than maybe we anticipated? Do you think they're just trying to get him off? Do you think they're trying to prevent that from happening longer than it needs to?
Yeah, that could be a factor. I hadn't even thought of that, but yeah, it's a good point. If he, you know, yeah, the earlier he comes back, the sooner you can start accruing cap space again. So yeah, that could be a factor. Obviously it's not, they wouldn't, you know, rush him back or like bring him back before he's ready just because of that. But yeah, I guess that would be a reason to, hey, if he is ready for that Toronto game or maybe even earlier, all right, bring him back. Like, you know, why wait? So yeah, that could be a consideration as well.
Yeah, I just know that like the way that the training staff has approached this entire season with the injuries coming in and just how they generally handle it. They are definitely too cautious to just be like, all right, you're 80%. Go ahead, go for it.
But also they do get everyone back sooner than initially planned.
They do, so. But I always get the sense that that was because they did such a good job at the like PT and like the recovery and the steps, not because they're just like, you're 75%, go ahead. No, like the guys felt 100%, just the training staff and the regimen and diet and everything was just done right. And that's why it ended up being a shorter amount of time.
Yeah. Another thing to not take for granted with this Bruins team right now is the medical staff. I mean, everything's going wrong in Vancouver, and including their medical staff is under heat up there too. For Tanner Pearson.
Yeah,
he had some setbacks, and their methods are being questioned up there and whatnot. Another good Bruins story tonight at the game was Matty Faulkner's 1,000th game as part of the equipment staff. I think he's the head equipment manager co-head equipment manager.
I don't know what his official title is.
He retired last year. Yeah. Was Don Del Negro? Did he retire last year?
Yeah.
So good for him. He got a nice little montage, which was nice.
Yeah, the master stick swapper. He's, you know,
that was a main part of the video board was all the times that he just like they even had like the highlighted circle over him handing a stick in the corner of the shot, just like, here, Pastrnak, go on a breakaway, here's your stick.
I mean there's been a couple times where like he's gone into guys so quick that they've ended up, you know, scoring or like being part of a scoring play, so
yeah, within like 10 seconds.
Yeah, an important part of the game, got to be on top of it, got to know, you know, exactly whose stick you grab
and how to get Ullmark's skate back together.
Yeah, they had to keep him busy in his 1,000th game.
Yeah.
Mark, no exception there. So, guys, we're at almost an hour. I want to throw this to you guys as like we said, the Bruins are going on an extended road trip here against some heavy competition. I guess not to ask a vague question, but they've been so good all year. They've beaten Tampa twice. They've beaten Carolina once. They've split with Toronto. They've split with Florida. What are you looking for the Bruins to continue doing against these teams in the next week? And is there anything that they weren't able to implement against these teams so far this year that you kind of want to see them impose on them a little bit in these next couple of games? Loaded question, and there's a bunch of teams I'm asking about, but just in general, I guess.
Yeah, so a few things that like just come to mind right away. Like, one is the complete efforts, which were absent most of December and then kind of came back like Winter Classic and after that. And, you know, then this past week, like at the Islanders game especially, they didn't get off to a good start. So, you know, now you're facing some of these teams that can actually make you pay if you don't bring it, or, you know, you take a period off or whatever. So that's one. Two, let's see if like this new, I don't want to say like newfound, you know, defenseman getting scoring, because
new emphasis or new
way. Yeah, just sticking with it, because that was another thing. Like Jim Montgomery even said tonight, he felt like they were getting away from it a month ago. Like they started the season doing it well, then they went through a stretch where their defensemen weren't as aggressive offensively, and now he feels like they're back to that. And, you know, because even taking like the goal scoring out of it, like they have been getting a lot more points from their defensemen than last season. I think they're now eighth in the NHL in defenseman points. Last year they were 24th. So this will be a good test to see if that can continue. We talked about this already with Carolina, but can you get high danger chances against a team like that, that defends so well? So those are a few of the things that, immediately come to mind.
But it's hard to like kind of pick something that they're not doing well a majority of the time that they need to work on, right? It's like stuff that they need to just make sure they have that there the whole game. So the only thing I will say is Taylor Hall's drought has continued. I don't really see that as a huge issue. He's still playing well. He's still in the top power play unit with DeBrusk out, and he was getting chances, and you would just feel that he's snake bitten. And I believe this is the longest he's gone without scoring a goal since he became a Bruin. So we're at, I believe, 16 games now that this one is complete. So this is the longest he's gone without scoring a goal as a Bruin. But I really don't think he's played all that bad, and that line still looks fine to me. So it's not a huge worry, but it would be nice to get him going too, and have, like, we've talked about it. If you have Taylor Hall on your third line, like, that's a really dangerous third line. Well, he needs to start being a little bit more dangerous.
Yeah, he definitely has had a ton of great chances to score. He's missed open nets
today.
Yeah, I mean, look, not necessarily like a, you know, it wasn't like a layup. I mean, it was a hard pass across the crease on the power play. But yeah, I mean, he's getting chances. To your point, his play doesn't appear to be poor right now. So if it were,
and
it'd be
neither
more
does his effort.
Right.
So
right. I guess to answer my own question, I would say along the lines of what Scott said about playing Carolina. I want to see the Bruins oftentimes, even when they're successful against the Hurricanes, like a lot of times they seem to be one and done in transition or in the offensive zone. I would love to see the Bruins have some extended shifts in Carolina's end, and just see if you can get that their structure to bend a little bit and put some pressure on them. I would like to see the Bruins depth be on display against Tampa. Obviously Tampa has some high-end players, but I do think Boston's deeper, so I would like for that to be on display. And then Toronto, let's see how fast this Bruins team is, right? I mean, the Bruins can win a ton of different ways. That's the beauty of this team. But let's see if this newfound, you know, structure and creativity can be on display up in Toronto. I mean, they've done it all year. I just want to, you know, keep seeing it happening. So that's what I would look for. Florida's a tough read, guys. I don't know how to read these Panthers. I mean, they have a ton of talent, and their analytics aren't bad. It's just that their record's not great.
I also want to say there's a chance that this could be their first stumbling block of the season, where we see like efforts that are not, or like them being outplayed maybe two nights in a row and losing two nights in a row to these teams that are better. You're talking about, you know, Tampa, Florida, and Toronto and Carolina. So you're talking about teams, all those teams in a row that could knock you back and throw you on, you know, maybe your first losing streak of the season. So then it would be important to see how you come back out of that.
Yeah. I do think like they'll be motivated not to have that happen though, because you have all these good vibes, and like the last thing you want is to go into the All-Star break into like a week and a half off on like your first two game losing streak. Like, you know, not saying it can't happen. Obviously it can, because you're facing good teams, so anything can. But I do think like they'll be motivated to finish strong going into the All-Star break and not have any sort of let up.
It's a long break too, right? It's like a 2-week All-Star break.
Yeah.
Which
they play Toronto on the first, and then their next game is the 11th. So yeah, like a full week and a half.
So it's not even really an All-Star break. It's more just like a mid-season break, because the All-Stars festivities are only one weekend.
Yeah, right? It's like as long as you'd get off to go play in the Olympics. And then in the past, they've been like, nah, guys, you can't take this time off to go play in the Olympics. So,
well, I think part of that is like they wanted to make sure they built that in, because you had like a couple players like Ovechkin or Taves who didn't play in the All-Star game because they're like, nah, screw this. Like, we want our break. So now it's like, okay, now everyone's going to get a break, even if you're going to the All-Star game. So
yeah, I think remember Jaromir Jagr was like, why the hell did you guys vote me in? I'm old. So he won the fan vote, and he was like, guys, no, no, I appreciate it, but like, I need to rest.
See, to your point, Bridget, that's when I could see, as much as I love the idea of certain I think this Bruins team long term would really benefit from these 2 weeks off. I mean, you're talking about key guys and Martian and Bergeron and Krejci and others. Like, yeah, give these guys 2 weeks off in the middle of the season, recuperate. So long term, I think it's great for this Bruins team and anybody else who's nursing injuries. But that could be the one time where you start to see them slip a little bit is after having 2 weeks off. I have to double check who they're playing after the All-Star break, but that could be where they're a little bit rusty and they might, that could be a trying time for a couple games too.
That'd yeah.
Capitals at home
and then road games in Dallas and Nashville.
But they also get 2 days off after the Capitals game. So
yeah.
What are we going to do for those 2 weeks, guys?
You know what? I really should have planned a vacation around this time of year.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, we're still here until then. All right, guys. Anything else you wanted to go over before we lock this one up? Put it in the vault?
Nah.
Nope. All good.
All right. Well, then we will. So we're next recording after the Canadiens game?
Is that accurate? Good.
Okay. All right. Enjoy the Bruins Canadiens, and we will talk to you guys soon.